So welcome to Outsource Radio, amplifying voices, inspiring the world. I'm your host, Alva Mireles, and I'm absolutely delighted to welcome today's guest, Kay Ross Golden, the author of the book titled Into the Grease Abyss. We're here to celebrate your creativity and explore the world you crafted in this book. Thank you so much, Kay, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's begin to know you a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to share your experience to this book?
Sure. So, I'm a wife, a mother, a grandmother. We live in Eastern Colorado. We've moved a few times in Colorado. I think we've been in Colorado for over 30 years now. My husband was Air Force for 20 years. Strange things happened in Southern California in 2017, really strange things. And then they kind of continued. And so I couldn't really talk to anybody about it. And even my husband, it's a nightmare. You just had a bad nightmare, bad dream. Okay. Well, when it continues to happen, it's not a bad dream. It's not a nightmare. It's happening. So I reached out to one person after watching her on a video. I knew she had already done work on cattle mutilations and the relation between whatever was coming down and taking the cattle, UFOs, ETs, okay? Linda Moulton Howe, renowned UFO researcher, abductee researcher, fantastic journalist, and woman who's warm-hearted, wonderful. I reached out to her and I actually got her at her home phone. Shocked me that I could actually get a hold of her, and I explained what was happening. I couldn't talk to anybody, so we had conversation after conversation after conversation. We still converse, and if it wasn't for her, I would not have been able to come forward with this information. I am a horse trainer by trade or by name. So I have my own horses, had horses all my life, and what I do is I do groundwork training here in Eastern Colorado, just so that people don't get bumped by their horse or run over by their horse. It's kind of a good thing to start with. So that's what I do. And so what made me write the book Into the Grey's Abyss is the fact that I was able to talk to somebody who finally said, hey, I understand, you're not alone. This is happening. And I've talked to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 10,000 people that have had this happen. And so that's how I brought everything out in the book.
And writing about something so deeply personal and, you know, controversial takes courage. What pushes you to finally say, I need to write Into the Grease Abyss?
Well, it was for me to get it out. I had to do it. I had to get it out of me. I had to get it out because my husband wasn't going to listen and my son wasn't going to listen. And they're both military. Well, my son is still military. My husband was, 20 years Air Force, but he works in space systems operation. He works with those big corporations, the big ones, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon. He's worked for all of them. So the ones that say the back engineering comes from Lockheed and this Raytheon does this and that. It's all intertwined, it's all incorporated. One person does this, one person does that. Nobody knows what each person is doing. That's compartmentalized, top secret stuff. My husband has top secret clearance, he has polygraph. And he can't tell me anything. If he knows anything, he can't tell me anything. And boy, is that frustrating. But I mean, if the book can help just one person, one abductee out there who's terrified, who has similar circumstances, I mean, blue light in the room or not, or maybe just seeing the Zeta Grays in their room or in their car, you know, all of these, as I put in the book, we all kind of have, I think, little pieces of this whole UFO enigma puzzle. And if the book can help just one or two people, then it's worth it. But I had to write it for myself. I had to get it out of me because I was going nuts. There was just, you can't live day to day. And just for example, I've got PTSD really badly because of this. So at night, it's really bad. If I'm just washing dishes in the sink and it's still happening here, And my husband just is all of a sudden, like at the side of me or behind me, I scream because I know it's him, but it's just the whole startling thing. And then I had one experience, and I put it in the book. We lived in northeastern Colorado for 5 years or so, and I was going out to get horse feed for the horses downtown in this small town, and I saw this drone that was a drone, but it was off, out of my peripheral right side, off the street, and it freaked me out so badly. I was watching that and not watching the guy that was operating it in the middle of the street, so I almost made him a new decoration on my lovely Ford truck. So I have the PTSD. I don't have bad nightmares. That's really kind of interesting. But I have the PTSD. I don't like being in the dark. I have to have a light on. I pretty much had to have a light on ever since I can remember. But now it's really, I can't have the room dark like my husband likes our room dark at night to go to sleep. I can't do that. I have to have something. Has got to have some light so I can see. And I check all the shadows in the room, because you just never know. And like I said, if this can help one or two people, then it's totally worth it to me. You've got the military guys come forward, the ones in the corporations like Lockheed and Raytheon and all that, who want to come forward, who aren't afraid to come forward and say, hey, this is what's happening. We're working on this. This is high advanced tech from ETs. We've had it for a long time. Back engineering, we're doing this, we're doing that. We've got a TR-3B up in the sky, which is made from apparently Lockheed Martin. That's the triangle. There is a ET triangle, and then there's the man-made triangle. So that's the man-made triangle. But I mean, all of this is just the tip of the iceberg. Nobody is touching on the fact, they say NHI, non-human intelligence. Okay, that's great. But they're not saying what they are, what these beings are. And my book goes into great deal detail about what these books are, the beings are.
Yeah, and the title alone, Into the Grease, Avis, feels, intriguing. Why did you choose that phrase to represent your journey?
Oh, well, because pretty much it's a little bit ominous. I understand that. And it felt like it. It was like, okay, I'm in this pit and I'm going down, I'm going down, I'm going down, and I can't crawl out of it. I'm in this abyss. It keeps going down and down and down. And you can't get out of it. Like I mentioned before, it's continuing. There's contact. There's crafts over my property. I have pictures. I have videos. And I'm not a technically savvy person, so I don't know how to mess with things like that and change them around. So when you see a photo or a video on YouTube from me and K Rose Golden, that's authentic. That is there. I mean, I was watching thunderstorms last week, taking a video just because I saw the lightning and it was really cool. And there was a lot of lightning. And it was dry, so I sat out there with my iPhone 15, sat out there. And then somehow I got a photo. I didn't look at the photo for a couple of days. I didn't look at the video either. And I look at this photo and go, what is that? And it's in the photo. It's a great big long white object. It's not a lightning bolt. It's not lightning at all. And I mean, it's a little blurry because I always kind of zoom in on things because there are things up there that are just incredible. And those will be in my next book, Inside the Labyrinth. So the abyss is just something I can't get out of. It feels like I'm stuck in it, and I've pretty much accepted it now. It took a long time to be able to do that. But that's why I titled it that way.
Yeah, and you describe these things, the set of greys, and especially the tall grey rex, with vivid clarity. That, what was your very first conscious encounter like?
Well, so that would have been the Diamond Bar. That was the day after Labor Day, the 4th of September, 2017. We were in Southern California in a rental house in Diamond Bar. And when I was taken and I woke up on that metal table, has a little, it felt like it had a little indentation in it for maybe even a smaller person. I'm tall and I have long legs. But when it first, I was on the table and something through the left just shot right in, gray, tall. And then it's kind of over my head looking down at me. And this is a tall being. And I'm kind of groggy because whatever they do when they immobilize you, I think they knock you out, make you groggy, kind of you kind of just are like drugged almost. So I'm there. I can't move because I'm strapped down to this table. And it's above me and it stares into my eyes. And that's really creepy. I mean, this tall gray has the big black liquid inky reflective pools of eyes. They're not as wide and wrap around like sunglasses on the smaller Zeta Grays, the 3.5 to 4.5 feet tall ones, the worker guys that come take the people. Those are the ones that come to and take you out of your room, out of your car. And the game has changed. The game has been upped on that now. But the tall gray, and this is the one that does the thought transference. It's not telepathy. It is pushing thoughts into my mind. So just simple things like if I'm laying there and I'm not latched down, and he wants me to sit up, it'll be, and he knows my name, K, you know, stand, or K, sit up, or K, calm. A lot of that time is when I'm freaking out and I can't move because we're doing a procedure, K, calm, or this must be done, this is necessary. But it's forced into my head, and it's horrible because I don't know if he knows his own strength, but when it shoots in, it hurts after a while. And if it's bantering back and forth, like I've tried to say, like, when the New Jersey drones were happening, all that East Coaster action during November and December and January 2024 and then in 25, I got taken again. And this was at the old house, and it was simply shocking because he had me standing, wanted me to stand. And this will be in the next book, by the way. It's not going to be in this book. With my mouth open and I'm drooling, so he's doing something with a clear screen, and it is maddening because I'm trying to say, why am I here and what can you tell me? Because I'm looking for some sort of back and forth here. What can you tell me about what's happening? What are those? Are those crafts? Are those drones? What is that? And then the only reply I got in my head while he was tweaking whatever he was on the screen, and which was in my head, I think he was messing with the implant somehow on this screen. So I'm pretty sure I have an implant at this point. They can't follow you if you don't have an implant in your body somewhere.
And you say also Rex has referred you as theirs. Like, do you have any sense of why or what that means? Why you in particular?
I don't know. No abductee knows why. I mean, I have a theory, but the whole thing, and trying to think about it logically, which is what I try to do, the only theory I can come up with is that when I was little, a 6-month-old baby on my mom's lap, we were in Northern Illinois. My dad was using a borrowed airplane to take my mom, me, one of my elder brothers. I have 6 brothers and 2 sisters. This is one of my elder brothers. And aunt and uncle and a friend of my dad's fishing trip to Branson, Missouri, flying down there. And apparently that was uneventful going down. And but coming back, we had a really bad thunderstorm, I guess, in Illinois, over Illinois. And I guess the tank was almost empty on the plane because dad was trying to maneuver around the thunderstorm somehow to get us back down to the ground in Illinois to get us home. And according to my elder brother, he said there was a lot of really eerie looking sky, and then there was a lot of lightning flashes, and there were orange flashes. And I kind of keyed in on that. I was like, okay, can you describe that? He goes, it was so long ago, I don't remember. And I said, okay, so what happened? He goes, well, dad was trying to bring the plane down, and we hit something. And that something almost tore the rudder completely off the airplane, the borrowed airplane, mind you. And I said, when you guys got down to the ground, were you nauseous? Did you feel like you'd only been up there for a few minutes and you guys looked at your watches and went, oh my God, it's like 2 hours later. He goes, you're talking about missing time. And I said, oh my God, you know about that? He goes, yeah. And he goes, no, so far back, it was 1967. He goes, I cannot remember that. So a little bit later, and my mom and dad are gone. There was no way for me to ask them at the point that I don't even think I knew about this crash until just a couple of years ago as I was writing the book. And my sister confirmed, you know, that the crash had happened, the crash landing. But, you know, you can't remember that far back. Who knows if anybody had missing time or was nauseous or had marks on them or anything. And if they did, they probably would have just chalked it up to, hey, it was a plane crash, you know, that type of thing. But I mean, I was okay. But then I guess about it, I was about a year old, year and a half old. And I remember seeing something in the moonlight in my room, trying to get me through the crib, pretty much the crib bars. It did have a big head. In the moonlight, it looked kind of pale, really pale, dark, wraparound looking eyes. And that's all I can really remember. And then reaching for me. And I had other experiences. I was younger with beings at my bedroom window when I was a kid, little kid in El Paso, Texas. I'd run to my mom and dad's bed and try to get in bed with them because I was so scared. And I'd tell them there's a monster at my window. There's something weird at my window. And, you know, of course, they tell the kid, oh, you're just having a nightmare type of thing. So when I was on the craft and that the one abduction scene where I think that was in the book, the March Madness one chapter. So he's got me in this room and I'm trying to look at him and all this. And then I get in my head, you know, you are ours. And I'm like, and it was stated like matter of factly, it wasn't a question. And, you know, any normal human's response to something like that, no, there's no way, no way. But I mean, I was not able to do that. But what I was trying to transfer to his head was like, I'm a human. I can't be yours. And it was more like, you are ours. Whether that means that I was theirs in captivity to do with what they wanted to do, possibly. If I was theirs as far as having some DNA mess with or something, I don't know. But my theory was, after I've learned all this stuff, that's possible. There are people out there who claim they are hybrids. And a lot of people are claiming now that we go back thousands and hundreds of thousands of years and they've been messing with our DNA the entire time. I can't go quite that far yet. I know Linda Moulton-Howe more than likely pretty much sticks to that we've been messed with for a long time. And then that could be why he said, you are ours. But I still think it might be more of a captivity thing that, you know, you're ours to do with what we want. You're a lab rabbit. That's that. And it sent bells and whistles going off in my head. And the whole statement when he said it just kept ringing in my head. And that's how I ended up asking him, well, okay, if I'm yours, what is your name? And then he said it was Resha the Yuak. And I tried to spell it in the book and it probably isn't right and you probably can't spell it. And so I think I just said, can I just call you Rex? And that's how that happened. So he is Rex for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. And do you think all these experiences are part of something, you know, bigger, something like a plan, you know, experiment, something like bigger than us?
Very bigger than us. So in the book, I have listed my recurring dreams. And I suppose a lot of people actually have dreams that they can jump into later. And that's not what this is. So the recurring dreams started in 2018 after a couple of the abductions. All of a sudden, I'm having a dream that I'm walking through, not desert. It was kind of like open space in Colorado behind some houses. And there's deer, and then the deer move away. There's something up above. It's a little misty out, a little foggy, and I'm walking through this trail. I see the doe and her fawn, and then they shoot off. There's a craft, and then there's another craft, and it's really big. It's like a rectangle or a square. It's kind of flat. I mean, it has some elevation to it. It has like, probably 20 feet high or 30 feet high, but it's flat and it's got lights all around and it's heading over me. And then there's a saucer right here too. This is really creepy, by the way. And this was the first dream. And the craft just keeps moving really slowly over me and over towards the north. And I don't know where it was. I mean, it could have been Northeast Colorado. It could have been heading to Denver. I might've put that in the book. But I'm not certain. That's the first dream. And then I had another recurring dream in Colorado. And that was that I'm waking up early in the morning. My husband's still asleep. We're in our old house, mind you. So it was that house. And I'm hearing something outside. So I'm like, oh God, what's going on? And I kind of got goosebumps and stuff. And so I automatically go to the closet in the entryway and grab my shotgun. And I'm carrying that. I'm barefoot, and it's winter time. It's not quite snowing, but it's got that look in the sky that it's going to snow. As I peeking out the blinds, I'm down on my knees with my shotgun in one hand in the stream, peeking out the blinds, and I'm seeing these crafts come, and then seeing all these little other beings coming. They're coming out of these crafts, and they're coming and they're grabbing people right out of their driveways, right out of their homes. And I'm going, oh my God! And I end up going out the door, and somehow I'm staying. I'm not in shock. I'm not shocked, maybe a little shocked. And I'm looking at my neighbors to the right and the left. And my one neighbor's got like a coffee cup or teacup in his hand. And he's just staring like a statue, and his cup just drops. And you can hear it shatter and the liquid pooling all over the place. So I'm looking, and there's a craft landing over here. There's a craft landing over here. There's a craft up here. There were big and medium and small. And then all those little robotic looking things coming out, and they were kind of flying or floating. And they had arms, and they were taking people and taking them back to these crafts. So that was the second one. And then I've had five of them. And one of them that really frightened me was the Kansas City one, where I'm driving 435 freeway. I'm heading back to Colorado or going to my sister's or something. I don't know. All this traffic is stopped. People are pulled over. There's people hitting people, not hitting people, but crunching into cars. There's the sound of glass breaking. It's very, very surreal. People are standing, looking up, and I stop my truck. I get out and I start looking up, and you see this big rip in the sky, portal or vortex, whatever you want to call it. And there are ships coming through it. There's saucers, there's triangles, there's these longer cigar shapes. What else? Diamond, there's some diamond shapes. And then there's this great big huge square that comes out of it. It's dark red, and it starts firing at all these different crafts. So through the dreams, I'm getting this impression that something not great is going to be happening over our very heads. Now, whether it's man-made or real extraterrestrial, I don't know. In my dreams, it's real extraterrestrial. This is real. Those bad guys in that big square are the bad guys. And the only bad guys I can think of, besides the Zeta Grays that take you and use you and all that, is the supposed tranaloids that go from one world to another world and annihilate them, according to Linda. Our discussions have been about that. What they fly, I don't know, but that's the impression I got. This great big ship coming out and shooting at, and it has had these weird spikes on it on each corner. It's got all those white lights, and it's got the weird spikes on each corner that can fire these really fast red shots, just a barrage of shots at the saucers and the triangles and the diamonds. And the diamonds could spin around and shoot blue. And that's what the pictures are in my book. I did the illustrations myself. I had the help of the publisher for that book. But they could spin around and fire, and I believe there were spheres and small spheres, all kinds of stuff coming out. So it's basically a war over our heads. And this was Kansas City, and it showed the buildings being hit, people being, you know, laid out, basically. And it was horrible. And I woke up from that screaming. I mean, that was awful, because my sister lives right near there, and I'm very familiar with the Midwest. So, yeah. Recurring dream after recurring dream after recurring dream. And they all just amplify in intensity.
And with all those stories, what advice would you give to someone who may be going through something similar, but it's afraid to speak up?
And I get that. You've got to reach out to somebody, or it will drive you nuts. You can't ignore it. You have to, because if you ignore it, you'll start hiding away from your family, from people you love. One of them might want to listen to you. I was lucky enough to reach Linda Moulton Howe. She is a great person to talk to. I don't know if she still takes calls, but Earth Files on YouTube is her podcast. And you can send a message in there, or she'll ask you, hey, do any of you have stories? Or can you, if you've had an experience like this, you know, let me know, and here's my email. And usually it's just earthfiles.com at earthfiles.com to send her any information. that's the best way. And if not, I mean, there are other abductees like me, Kay Rose Golden, on Facebook that you can reach out to. I don't mind chatting with people about these things. It helps. And if you have the courage to come forward, it's almost becomes a detriment to your health if you don't.
Yeah, and you told us a little bit about the new projects that you have. Can you explain a little bit what is coming up?
Sure. So Into the Gray's Abyss, this current book, I'll just show it real fast. This is the old book. Well, not old. It's still available on Amazon.com. And this is the first edition, if you would, from October 24. I wanted to make sure it gets the attention that it should have for everybody out there. So I put a little history chapters here and there about Roswell and some other interesting things that have happened. Those were chapters that got left out of the original book. They're going into the new reformatted Volume 1 and Volume 2, Into the Gray's Abyss, the Unbelievable If Not Experienced, of course, which it is, and Volume 2 is The Abductions Continue. So those two will have some extra chapters in them as well as the originals, but they'll be a little bit more better wording to them, and a few more pictures in there as well and photos. And then the book that I'm working on, the third book, is Inside the Labyrinth, and that should be out by Christmas. And that's going to have more abductions that have happened since that last Volume 1 and Volume 2, because that is all from 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. So this will be pretty much the end of 24 or 25 forward, and it's going to have incredible pictures of things I've seen over the sky in northeastern Colorado above our house, above my horse's ranch, and then here in eastern Colorado above our new ranch. It's going to be interesting, and it'll have some good history in it as well. I am a history buff, but just some things that people don't talk about in the UFO world that I think probably need a little bit of attention. So, and to everybody, again, you've got the military witnesses coming out, the government contractors who want to come out to speak out, who aren't going to be slapped down for speaking out. With a top secret clearance, you do have to be very, very careful. My husband has one. He has a polygraph. He can't say a word to me about anything. He's worked for all these different big aerospace companies over the last 16 years or so. We've only got a few more years and we'll be retired. But with that being said, that's the tip of the iceberg. The bigger thing is what is behind the crafts. Not man-made crafts, not the TR-3B from, like I said, from Lockheed Martin, but the saucers, like the one I think I got in my picture last week, right here over our property during the lightning storm. Oh my God. I'll post that on Facebook one more time if you guys want to reach out and give me your comments, what you think it is. That would be kind of cool. I'd like to hear the feedback.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you so much for sharing all your stories. Listeners, don't forget to go to Kay Rose Golden Facebook. Do you have Instagram, though?
I do. I have Instagram, and I believe I think Facebook, Instagram. I'm on Twitter also.
Okay, got it. And thank you. Thank you for giving us a glimpse into your work and sharing your patience. And listeners, be sure to check her book. Thank you for tuning into Altars Radio, Amplifying Voices, Inspiring the World. And join me next time for another inspiring conversation. In the meantime, happy listening.
Thank you.